fan. On demand. Log on to Sportsnet590.ca. Sign up to automatically receive the latest reports, features, and Fan 590 show highlights. Look up. Look way up. He sits alone atop the standings. Bob McCown and Primetime Sports. Now on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
One of the advantages of being on television and having a monitor is you can fix your hair.
Yeah, you can.
Doing the best I can. I don't have a hairdresser.
You do very well on your own, Bob. I'm impressed.
Well, no, I know all you TV guys downstairs, you have makeup people, hairdressers, all that
people.
Kind of
the stuff.
The
hair's all me.
Well, they'll do your hair for you if you want. I don't have anybody. I'm a lowly radio guy up here.
I just go with whatever product they have and I slick it back. So, kind of tough shoes for me to fill here.
It's a pretty strong show, I'd say. I mean, Sally for an hour. We bumped Richard Deitch, which isn't easy.
Mm-hmm.
Jeff Molson, the owner and CEO of the Montreal Canadiens, is going to join us in a few minutes. Bob Cole, the legendary play-by-play voice of hockey.
Always a good day when you get to talk to one of your heroes. I know he's just a coworker now, but he's still Bob Cole.
Oh, baby.
Oh, baby.
And, well, now he's part of the... La Familia Rogers.
Yes.
Monday, Tuesday, Thursday, Wednesday.
A lot of days.
So we'll see how he feels about being in the family. And Don Banks of Sports Illustrated. Banks doesn't usually get last billing on the show.
Well, I think the billing today was just in no particular order because it's five-star the whole way.
I have warm water. I know people who drink water all the time say you should drink your water at room temperature, shouldn't you? People think you should drink red wine at room temperature. It's not true.
No? Your water's still wet, though.
Do you know that fact? It's not even open. How would you know?
Well, it's always wet. The old man always says, but the water's warm, Dad. At least it's wet.
Will you tell Gail Longworth we have to change the labels on these? Since Damien has left the program, I don't like him being on this label anymore.
Use liquid paper. Just liquid paper him out.
We've been doing that.
Oh. They still sell liquid paper?
Sure they do.
That used to be really cool in high school.
See, Damien's wearing a red shirt, so even though I blotted him out, he still kind of comes through.
Kind of comes through as you've highlighted him now.
No, but a cup of tea would be nice. Thank you very much. Be great. Thank you very much. I appreciate it. Oh, you didn't fix my computer either. My computer's still dead. I think Bret Hart kicked it over or something, kicked over the machinery underneath the desk. He was wrestling with it.
He won Name That Wrestler. I lost again. I never win Name That Wrestler.
I wouldn't get one right.
You'd get one. You'd get Ric Flair, wouldn't you?
No. The only ones I'd get are Sky Lolo or
Little
Fuzzy,
Beaver.
Fuzzy Cupid or Little Beaver.
You know, I did put you down on the card again. Twice I used you.
For what?
Well, when it was Ric Flair.
You couldn't identify one?
Well, no, I knew it was Ric Flair and he's going on, I'm riding around in limousines, I'm jet flying. And limousine
well,
ride.
I might have got him. He's nice. Pretty.
No, so I put Ric Flair or Bob McCown.
One of the two.
Because he had the same mentality. and then one came on and the guy said, I will bury every one of you. And you will all bow before me. So I put The Undertaker or Bob McCown.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
I think. Thank you very much.
Yeah. It's like when I look forward to you calling me an idiot. Same kind of thing.
Hasn't happened yet.
I'll get there.
We'll see.
I'll get there.
Like John Houseman used to say, you'll have to earn it.
I will earn idiot. So far, I think I'm doing a pretty good job of trying to be an idiot and a moron.
I don't think you're trying that hard.
That's nice. It does come naturally
to me. It kind of flows.
It does come naturally to me.
Is there anybody that still thinks the Blue Jays are in contention?
I'd love to meet them. You know, there's somebody out there that does. What, 6 out, 11 to go?
Well...
Is there anybody out there what I find humorous, Bob, is there was people out there that actually thought they were in contention when September started.
Well, and that's what I was going to say. I said September 1st. I know that this is going to be a bone of contention, but I am not certain that the Toronto Blue Jays, after 20 consecutive years, are finally going to play a meaningful baseball game in the month of September. I'm not sure we actually saw it.
The biggest tease.
I mean, it depends on your, it depends on where the bar is.
Mm-hmm.
You know, do you jump over it or do you limbo under it? How close do you have to be? What is your definition of meaningful baseball? And I acknowledge, different for everybody.
Within three would have been meaningful to me. But the biggest tease is when they swept the team that calls themselves a big league ball club, which is the Chicago Cubs.
Oh, yeah.
When they swept the Cubs,
But they didn't just swipe them. They swept them. They beat the tar out of them.
29 runs in three games. So everybody got all amped up, as they should have. You're fans. Sure. The whole word fan is based on fanatical.
Will you pass my tea over?
Thank I'd be honored much. To pass your tea to you. So everybody freaked out. And then, you know, they did okay the next series. And then reality... peeked in on them again. But I heard somebody talking about the Baltimore Orioles the other day, and I believe it was Joe Siddall talking about Dan Duquette. And he said, Dan Duquette had the mentality this year that you don't have a chance to win often, I'm going to go for it. Well, where in the name of all that's holy was that mentality around Toronto in June and July, especially after May, when they came with the hammer, they looked outstanding. They were the best team in baseball in May. And we didn't hear, man, this team's just got to go. We heard, hey, if they play 500 ball, they can make it. They just play 500 the rest of the way. Well, why just play 500 the rest of the way? Why not crank it up and just try annihilate everybody in your way?
They would have been happy to pay 500 as it turned out.
Yeah, they would have, exactly. And maybe we discovered that they weren't the team they were in May. They weren't the team they were in August. They're a 500 ball team, basically. Because right about now, I believe they're three games above 500. So if they would have cranked it up and gone with a little bit of Ric Flair attitude, with a little limousine riding, jet flying, little cocky stuff, then it could have been a different story because, as Dan Duquette pointed out, you don't get a chance to win often. I think that's a huge part of it.
I don't know. I mean, I'm not saying no. I don't know. I mean, I get asked all the time. I mean, the most commonly asked question over the last couple of weeks when people run into me or whatever is, it happened today. It happened at about 2 o'clock this afternoon. I was over on Yorkville.
Mm-hmm.
Guy sitting at a little cafe by himself, and I'm stopped across the road, and he says, "Hey, Bob, what about the Blue Jays?
Yep.
What do you think they have to do?" I'm like, well, I don't know. I mean, and I really don't. I could rattle off four or five things, but could I say that there's one thing? What's the one thing that would have made the difference this year for this team?
If this team learned how to score runs without relying on the home run, that would have made a huge, huge difference. Because May was courtesy the home run.
That's a good point, yeah. We saw it again. We saw it last night early in the ball game. Was it last night? They had runners on first and second with nobody out.
Yep. They did nothing. If they learned to score runs without the home run, because the pitching
maybe
was fine.
Out, but, well, I think Lynn got a double, and then Kawasaki walked or something.
Yeah, they had the bases loaded.
Did they
nothing
load them?
Came. Well, that, I don't remember. Yeah, they loaded them up last night. Nothing came out of it. And
but
here's
it seems to happen. You're right. It seems to happen all the time.
Looked it up a couple days ago because I was curious. After they pinch hit Pilar for Adam Lind a couple nights ago, you know, Adam Lind has had 32 at bats against left-handed pitching.
That's absurd.
Year.
Like
32, and you could say, well, he's hitting .063 against lefties. Yeah, so. How do you get better when you don't face a left-handed hitter? And this guy's a Silver Slugger Award a few years ago. Let him take his cuts. Get him in there. That just
let
boggles
him figure
my
it out.
Mind. Yes.
Either he is or he isn't.
He is or he isn't. But you can't.
And the guy's a .340 hitter against right-handed pitching.
Right.
So we know he can hit. We also know he's got some pop, too. Now, he had 20-something home runs a couple of years ago. Now, he's had a couple in the last week.
Recently, yeah. Showed his pop.
It's there. I mean, the guy is a great, pure hitter.
Yep.
But at some point in time, especially he hasn't been given that opportunity over any extended period of time since he was sent down to Las Vegas a couple of years ago. And at that point, his swing was so messed up, he didn't know what he was doing.
Right.
So they bring him back. Now, here's your opportunity. Put him in. Put him in every day. Even if it's DH, whatever it is, let him hit against the left-handed pitching for a month, 6 weeks. Let's see if there's any improvement, if he figures it out. He ain't going to figure it out getting one shot every, you know.
Nope.
2 or 3 weeks. One at bat every 2 or 3 weeks against a left-handed pitcher.
I was stunned. 32 at bats against left-handed pitching, but.
I didn't know if it was that high.
The guy can hit, like you said. You're in the American League. You can DH the guy. Let him do it. But you're taking Adam Lind out of the lineup and you're pinch hitting Pilar for him, who has no home runs, no pop. And there's a lot of things I question about this year. Number one for me is the ability to produce runs without the home run. You have to figure out ways to score runs without the home run. And for a large part of this season, this team couldn't do it. The rotation, thankfully, sorted itself out. They were on a great run here in August, getting at least six innings at all their starters. So that sorted itself out. The other thing we always hear is, oh, you judge a manager by how he manages his bullpen. Well, how did that go this year?
Well, I mean, I don't think it's the results in the bullpen as much as how you manage the bullpen, and I watch very carefully those kinds of things because I believe that's the only thing a manager does that can have any impact.
Okay.
And the principal bugaboo for me is managers who profess faith in a guy who will sit in the dugout while I'm sitting at home or in the press box and watch a guy come in out of that bullpen. I don't care what he did yesterday or last week. What's he got today? Every day is different, especially for relievers. Every day is different. I don't have the luxury with a reliever, or shouldn't have the luxury with a reliever that I have with a starter. Guy goes out, has a rough first inning. You know, as long as the damage isn't ridiculous, you let him try and work it out.
Mm-hmm.
Don't have that luxury with relievers.
Nope.
You come in, either you have it or you don't. Either you get people out or you don't. After two at-bats, that's when I'm making a decision. Am I leaving him in further, or am I yanking his chain out of there? I'm never putting a guy in from the bullpen and not having somebody else getting ready behind him, just in case this guy hasn't got it. Doesn't mean I won't put him in tomorrow, or he won't be more effective tomorrow, but I'm going to be ready. With few exceptions, Gibby does that as well as any manager we've had. But there still are exceptions. There have been times
where
he's... The
exception was Casey Jansen last week. He came in and just didn't have it, and they just left him out there.
Can't do that. And the reason they do that, and Gibby is part of that group, that cult.
That's a baseball thing.
That's a baseball thing, not a Gibby thing. Your closer gets to finish it no matter
exactly.
What.
Exactly. He's our closer. Why? There's so many baseball things I don't understand. Can't make your first or third out at third. Why not? What's wrong with trying to be aggressive? And the whole closer thing is, well, he's our closer. So, you got Aaron Sanchez there, who's kind of established that maybe he could be your closer, or perhaps more. I'm not going to.
Well, there'll be days when he doesn't have it.
Sure, there will be.
The trick is, don't leave him out there to prove.
Yeah, and there'll be days when Jansen
that you're right
is unhittable. But on days that he is hittable and he doesn't have his stuff, because they always say, you know, before we called him in, I called down to the pen, and they said down there that he had the good stuff. That's cool.
Yeah, let's find out when he gets on the 60 feet 6 inches away on the right.
And I'm not going to throw Casey Jansen under the bus, because I believe he's had 3 blown saves since the All-Star break. So he's not the problem. We're just citing an example here.
I know. We're watching Casey Jansen on the screen for those of you listening in radio.
Yes.
And I don't know what game it was from. Some game against Tampa. The relevance of that is lost on me. But
could have been the one
I
was referring
to. We watched him walk somebody.
Yes.
Yeah, well, that's... I don't think Gibby's to blame for this.
I don't
in any way, shape, or form. I wouldn't make a change at manager, but if they do, I mean, you can understand it if they do.
Well, you know what? You said the only thing you judge the manager on is the easiest thing is how they handle the bullpen. I would question how you fill out the lineup card, because if Adam Lind is not in there every day... And getting the chance to face lefties, then I'm a little puzzled. I'd also question the use of what happened in center field this year. We sat around here last year and we said the biggest thing the Jays have to address is up the middle. Catcher, second base, center field. Well, this year they went 1-for-3 on that. They figured out what to do at catcher with Deion Navarro.
He was a surprise defensively.
He was a surprise, yes. And
did a pretty good job defensively.
With his bat, he's fine. I think he has has the best batting average at home of any Blue Jay player. It's around .315. Up the middle, Ryan Goins, fantastic glove. Problem is, he's so far proving he can't hit at the big league level. And in center field, I mean, I don't know what's going on there. I think Colby Rasmus probably isn't coming back. Anthony Gose, defensively, he's fantastic. The only problem is you can't steal first base. Now, if you could steal first base, he's your man. But, I mean, for the love of something.
You can have one defensive a player who's who excels defensively but can't hit.
Right.
I think you can have one of those in your lineup.
And if you have him in that.
But if you have two, you're stretching it.
You better have yourself a Melky Cabrera in left field that can hit.
And for a good portion of the season, you had no bat in center field, second base, or third base.
Right. I mean, look on the screen now, Ghost is doing his thing. I mean, defensively, he's splendid in center field.
As good as it come.
But you know what? I know he worked on his batting at the end of the last season. Here's bunting. Please teach him how to bunt. Please. Shouldn't at the big hard, league level. How can you not know how to bunt at the big league level?
We got a guest to get to. I mentioned Don Banks and Bob Cole will join us a little bit later on in the program. But first, we are pleased to welcome the owner and chief executive officer of the Montreal Canadiens. Here's Jeff Molson. Mr. Molson, how are you?
I'm fine, thanks. How are you?
Excellent. Getting ready? You got
started today.
Yeah. It's a rite of September. As NHL players go to training camp and another hockey season is set to begin.
Yes.
The issue around the Montreal Canadiens over the past a little while has been the decision not to have and to name a captain, at least not at the beginning of this season. And let me start with that premise there. Do you think there's a chance that a captain will be named before the season ends?
Oh, I think Marc Bergevin, our general manager, was very, very clear with the media a couple days ago that there are some great young leaders and some great veteran leaders within the group, and his plan is to stick with the four assistants, two of them being the young leaders and two of them being the veterans, and observe and watch the total leadership group perform throughout the whole year. Yeah.
Look, there's no doubt that the Montreal Canadiens, I was going to say, they're not only an iconic franchise, they may be the most iconic franchise in the National Hockey League and one of the most iconic in all of sport. And you get that designation because of the greatness that preceded all of us. And, you know, even the three of us have had the great privilege of watching great captains for the Montreal Canadiens, not just good people, great leaders and great players. Does that weigh on the decision in your mind that there is a legacy and a history here that needs to be followed and upheld?
Oh, I think eventually every team needs a captain, and I think our organization is in a position right now that's sort of in transition, and we have some great young players. And Mark and his group chose PK Subban and Max Pacioretty to represent the future of the franchise and be leaders. And you know, I think eventually a captain will be named, but I don't think there's any rush from our side.
Jeff, it's Ken Reed here. Is this, you think, maybe a little easier to have the four guys share the alternate than one guy wear the C, just from a media responsibility alone? Because when a game ends, good or bad, a lot of the media turn to the captain, and I mean the amount of media that enter the Montreal Canadiens dressing room, French and English, on a daily basis, it is massive. Is this a lot easier for the guys to deal with in the room if they're just kind of divvying this up?
Well, you know, you're right. There is a lot of media because they come in both languages, and I don't think that was a priority in the decision. I think all of our players are responsible to talk to the media. And you know, the captains do more than just talk to the media, right? They help in the dressing room, they help individual players, and you know, they represent the team on the ice. And so you know, there's always additional pressure on an assistant captain and a captain, but overall it was not to devise the or increase the number of leaders that can talk to the media. No.
Jeff, can I just ask you about expectations for this year, given the playoff run you guys had last year, and specifically expectations for a couple of your young players like Brendan Gallagher and Alex Galchenyuk, two uber-skilled young guys? What are the Montreal Canadiens expecting from guys like that?
Well, I always prefer not to talk about specific players because I really see that as the role of the general manager and the coach. But you know, you mentioned a couple of names, and there are additional names as well that just experienced quite an incredible ride in the playoffs. And you know, some of them are 20 years old, and some of them are 24, 25 years old. And you know, they experienced great victories and some difficult times as well during the playoffs. So you know, the hope is that that experience is just another one that they can put in their bank and come back this season and be stronger, more experienced, and more ready for the season.
With Jeff Molson, the owner and chief executive officer of the Montreal Canadiens. Let me ask you about that title and your experience over the last while since you acquired this iconic franchise. Has it been everything you expected it to be?
Yeah, I'm heading into my fifth year on the job, and it's been, every year is an additional learning experience. And obviously, when you buy the team, you inherit the team, and the coaching staff and the general manager. And over the course of the first 2.5 years or so, I made some significant adjustments to the leadership of the organization, including starting with the leadership, but following the leadership, the whole coaching and support staff around Marc Bergevin. And so, for the first 2 years, I think I would say that I spent most of my time listening, learning, observing, and trying to do the best I can. And in the second 2 years, now heading into the third year, I really feel like it's the team that I've helped to build. And I'm hoping it's going to stay in place for a long time for us to have a nice ride here.
Do you think the pressures are greater? I know you haven't owned another franchise, but do you think the pressures are greater on a team like the Montreal Canadiens than they would be almost anywhere else, and certainly in the National Hockey League, because of the heritage, because of the number of cups, because of the legendary nature of the players who have put on that uniform?
Yeah, I think, the first thing I always look at is, it's pressure, yes, but it's passion that causes the pressure. And we have, our fans have so much passion and love for the Montreal Canadiens in Quebec, but also across Canada. And I try and think of it that way, because there is a lot of pressure to perform, and the league is not the same as it was in the past decades, it's more and more difficult to be a Stanley Cup champion, and you see it across the league. I mean, there are some really good teams for the past 10 years that still haven't won the Stanley Cup. It's very hard to do, and so yes, there's a lot of pressure, but I think there's a way of absorbing that pressure and converting into an understanding of how much our fans love the team. The other thing that I think is unique in Montreal is it's the only major professional team, and that's all eyes are on the Montreal Canadiens. And it's no disrespect to the other sports that are played here, but we don't have an NFL team or an NBA team here or a Major League Baseball team.
True enough. George Gillette is a friend of mine. I had the great privilege of seeing George when he was the principal owner of the Canadiens, and I also have seen him in visits to Toronto specifically, where I was walking with him and people who are Montreal Canadiens fans would recognize him and stop him on the street and literally thank him. Being the owner of the Montreal Canadiens obviously garners you a level of attention that almost none of the, I'm sure none of the other businesses that you've been involved in ever did or could. How do you deal with that? Do you get stopped on a regular basis? Do fans, generally speaking, just want to say hello, or do they want to give you a piece of their mind or a little advice?
Well, it's a bit of everything. I think it depends on the season as well, but I think in general, the fans have so much appreciation for this team that yes, they do recognize me, and most of the time it's thank you for doing a great job, or thanks for leading the team. And once in a while it's comments about specific players.
Sure.
I remember during the playoff run, the first year we bought the team, we were losing 3-1 in the first round against Washington. 3-1 in the first round against Washington, and I was walking along the street, and a fan, I wish I had his phone number, a fan screamed out of his car and said, you better do something about your team, Mr. Molson. And, we ended up winning that series 4-3, and then we ended up beating Pittsburgh Penguins 4-3, And I just wish I could meet that guy one more time and
how's that?
Shake his hand and thank him for his passion.
Jeff, everybody goes through that. Well, for me at least, when you get your dream job, I mean, I sit here and I go, wow, I get to sit beside Bob. Did you go through that period of, wow, I own the Montreal Canadiens, or did you, or if so, when did it end, or is it still going?
Well, I think I still wake up in the morning and think how lucky I am, for sure. I've been lucky my whole life, though. I've been involved with this team in some way or another, either as a child of my father's or as a board member when Molson Coors was an owner with George Gillette.
Right.
And so I've been close to the organization since I was a toddler, and so I have a feel for it and a respect for it and an understanding of it, how it needs to be managed publicly and internally. I feel so privileged to be able to represent something that's so important to so many people. But at the same time, I didn't go through that phase of, not knowing what to do because I'm surrounded by so many superstar hockey players now.
Mm-hmm. With Jeff Molson, the owner of the Canadiens. So I have to ask you about this. There was a story that there may have been a different point of view between you and Mark during the PK Subban negotiations. Was that in fact true?
No, not at all. Not at all. We have Mark and I have a fantastic relationship, and we communicate on a very regular basis. I'm positive that both of us were completely focused on signing PK for the long term, and I'm also positive that PK wanted to be signed for the long term with the Montreal Canadiens. And it was a process that took longer than most people expected, I think. And at the end of the day, you know, Mark and PK and PK's agent found a solution and got a deal done, and we couldn't be happier.
The other thing we wanted to talk to you a little bit about is this new 3-year contract for regional broadcasts with this very network, Sportsnet, and the Habs signing that deal. What do you see as the import of that?
Well, I think there's those English broadcasts are going to be in the Quebec and the Atlantic provinces, and so there are hundreds of thousands of fans that are English speaking in those provinces that are going to have a chance to watch our games in English, and so we're offering another opportunity for our fans to watch our games, and for the first time in the history of our organization, 82 of our games are going to be broadcast in both French and English. So we're very excited about that.
That's almost inconceivable that it's the first time that that's happened.
Yeah, it's amazing, isn't it? And you know, we live in Quebec, so it's a French market first. But this is something we're really excited about, and more people will get to watch our games, and that's the objective.
I mean, I grew up in Nova Scotia where you're either a Habs fan or a Leafs fan, and there's a few Bruins fans, a few Wings fans, but I was a big Habs fan growing up as a kid. How important is it just for you guys? I know it's such an iconic brand, but do you look at this as a huge opportunity to expand your brand just down east in Atlantic Canada? Because there are, I'll be honest, there's a ton of Leafs fans now. It seems like there's more Leafs fans when I go home than Habs fans now, which was not the case when I was growing up.
Yeah. Well, we're always trying to make sure that we're building our brand in every way possible. And the nice thing about hockey fans in Canada is it's transgenerational. And so if your father was a Montreal Canadiens fan, then you know, you become one as well, and you live through your father's fans, like fandom, so we have fans from coast to coast. We have fans in the U.S. as well. Some of them are legacy fans because they watched Jean Béliveau play and fell in love with the team, and their children follow the team because their father did. And others are new fans because we got young players, you know, like PK Subban and Carey Price that are important players in the National Hockey League, and they're well regarded across all the hockey worlds.
Aside from you know, supporting and growing the brand, which is the core business of the Montreal Canadiens. Is there anything else? Is there anything challenging, interesting on your plate, something that we're going to hear about in the next little while? Is there a project that is a pet one of yours?
No, I don't think so. I mean, I put a lot of my efforts around trying to support the organization that's going to put the best product on the ice, and that's the focus every day for me. We have an entertainment company as well called Eventco, which is a great business, and I'd spend some time on that as well. But as far from a hockey perspective, you know, we're going to keep plugging away and looking for that little advantage to make our team a better team on the ice and continue to build so we can have a winning organization for the longer term.
Jeff, the stat we always hear every spring is a Canadian team hasn't won the Stanley Cup since the Montreal Canadiens in 1993. Montreal had a pretty significant player come along a little bit after 1993, I want to say 5 years or so, and he just retired. I just want to get your thoughts on Saku Koivu calling it a career and what he meant to the people of Montreal during his, I believe, 11, 13 seasons in Montreal.
Yeah, he was. I'm not sure if it's 11, 12, or 13, but he was the captain of our team for 10 years. And only one other player in our organization has been captain for longer, and that was Jean Béliveau. Mm-hmm. And so he means a lot to this city. And he meant a lot on the ice because of how hard he worked all the time and how he really was a captain and a leader of the organization. But even off the ice, he was very involved in the community and totally committed to being part of Montreal, and on top of that, he recovered from cancer, mm-hmm. and came back to play hockey, and so he's in the hearts of many Montrealers and will be for a long time.
Jeff, we know your schedule is busy. We thank you very much for taking a few minutes to join us. Hopefully, somewhere down the road, we'll be able to do it again. Thank you for this, though.
Thanks for your time.
Jeff Molson, the owner and CEO of the Montreal Canadiens. By the way, all 82 Montreal Canadiens games available on a regional basis. However, some 40 games will air nationally,
That's
no matter
crazy.
Where you are across the country. 22 of them on Saturday night. 6 of them on Scotiabank Wednesday night hockey. And 5 of them on Rogers' hometown hockey, which are the Sunday night matchups.
Now, I was a Habs fan growing up down east, and most of the time we'd get our Saturday night game would be the Leafs. So I'd watch the Montreal Canadiens on CBC French. So
many people did.
Yeah.
I was guilty of the same thing.
It was great listening to the French announcers, though, wasn't it? They're great.
Although my French was never good enough.
Allez-vous.
But my French was never great enough to really understand most of what they were saying. But really, all you do is they're identifying the players as they go up and down the ice.
I used to love Le but de Canadien, America, number 35, Mike McPhee, avec le numéro 39, number 39, Brian Scrudland. I used to love that. Loved it. Claude Brochu would do those announcements, if I was not mistaken, the public address announcer.
Well, that's where I learned what avant de crochet meant.
Avant de crochet? Mm-hmm. Qu'est-ce que c'est?
Cross-checking.
Oh, a... 5 minutes pour se travailler. 5 minutes for fighting. I loved it.
27 before the hour. We'll take the break. Back with more. Primetime continues on the Sportsnet radio and television networks.
Like free sports tickets, trips, and memorabilia so you can trick your friends, colleagues, and mistresses into thinking that you're some sort of high roller? Hey, join the club.
Welcome to the club.
The Fan Club. Log on to Sportsnet590.ca. Now, more of Bob McCowan and Primetime Sports on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Ooh, yeah. Well, all right, we're jamming. I wanna jam it with you. We're jamming.
Before the hour. Count here and reads right there.
I got my Claude's mixed up. Claude Mouton. Claude Brochu.
Yeah.
Claude Mouton. Habs Brochu. Les Expos. Please forgive me.
Don Banks, Bob Cole will join us later on. It's thrilling to see that the Royal and Ancient Golf Club of St. Andrews has found its way into the 20th century. Only took until the 21st century to get there. Today, the RNA announced actually not the RNA, it's the RNA Golf Club of St. Andrews, announced its membership has voted to allow female members.
Huh. Congrats.
Who knew they didn't have them?
Mm-hmm.
Here's our own Ian Leggett. It is I'm all right. It's important, Lego, to let people know that, and perhaps you'll explain this. I tried to explain it to Ken Reed, and his eyes kind of glazed over.
Yeah, I got a nosebleed right now, Lego, so talk slowly, buddy.
Yeah, but but we all know Reed is not too bright. You know, this is not the brightest candle in the menorah, if you know what I mean. So
we know that.
Yes. So kind of describe the difference here. People think the Royal and Ancient Golf Club is the course and the club like we traditionally have here. It's not that way there. There's all kinds of clubs, and there's a golf course, right?
Yeah, so this is a collective group of 2,400 members globally around the world that are sort of, you know, if you want to call it a membership, but it's not like, as you say, it's not being a member at, you know, Summit Golf Club or the National. It's not that type of thing.
Right.
It's a group of guys that historically, really, when you talk about the history of the game of golf and St. Andrews being that place, historically have, you know, only been men. And this, you know, group of people have specifically, obviously, men have protected the game of golf. That's why they're there. They're there to protect the rules and the integrity of the game. And as the game has evolved, you know, over the period of time, obviously dating back, you know, as I said, 260 years, that has included women. It's included, you know, black, white, it doesn't matter, you know, your color, race, creed, or religion. The game of golf touches everybody, and it's about time that the RNA kind of got in line with all of this and allowed women to be part of this association.
Now, I've had the great privilege of playing the old course at St. Andrews. I assume you have. I don't know if I've ever talked to you about it. I know there's a few.
You've
played it, right? So, and I was asked during the break, well, you played there. Were there women actually playing? I know they weren't members of the RNA, but St. Andrews is the old course is a public golf course. Are women allowed to play the course? And I said, you know what? I don't remember whether there were women playing or not. Do you know?
Yeah, women can play anytime there. Obviously,
that's what I figured.
They can't be a member of the club. And this is a little different than, you know, what we have right here in Toronto is with the National Golf Club. Women are allowed to be. The National Golf Club do not allow women literally on property. There's no, you know, I'm a member at a club, used to be a member at a club in Arizona. Women were allowed to play. They weren't allowed to be members. And
gotcha.
This is very similar to RNA. And, you know, there's different areas where, you know, I've gotten into this debate with people before with all women sports clubs. And we have Jewish golf clubs. And where we draw the line when it comes to the access to be allowed to play the game. Now, I think all of those are very, very different than the RNA. The RNA being the governing body of golf, you know, we all know that that's the way it is. They're closely tied to Golf Canada and the USGA. When you run a women's event where they run the British Women's Open, they run the British Women's Amateur, why are women not allowed to be part of this club? And now it's finally,
a great question.
You know, after 260 years, they've, you know, finally, you know, right the ship and allowed this to happen.
Well, and I was telling the guys too, what you got to understand is because the club thing is so different there. Like if you, along, you know, the first and 18th hole, we showed a picture on the screen of the RNA clubhouse, which sits behind the first tee and 18th green at the old course. But then along, and there's the picture again for those of you watching on television, that's the RNA clubhouse right there. That's the home of golf, in essence. And that's the old course in front of it. And there's the bridge over the Swilken Burn. Along the right side of 18 are all these buildings. It's a street. There's a street there, and there are these buildings along there. And many of those, if not most of those, are actually clubs. And they are golf clubs. Kind of like the RNA, but not with its stature. And people can be members at these clubs, but it doesn't necessarily mean, it's not like being a member of the old course. There are no members of the old course, right?
Well, there are. If you're an RNA member, you have access above anyone else.
I get that.
To have a tee time. Yes.
But it's still a public golf course. It is still a public golf course.
It's very much a public golf course. Yes,
right.
Absolutely. And that includes women. It includes, you know, like I said, any race, you know, gender, ethnicity, whatever you want to call people that want to play the game of golf. Anybody can go to the first tee if they're granted a tee time at the R&A.
Right. As three guys who love golf, and we all do, doesn't a headline like this, Royal and Ancient Golf Club of St. Andrews votes to admit female members, doesn't this feed the general public that thinks of golf as a snobby sport just make them kind of go, what is wrong with this game? Why are we, I mean,
well,
to me,
that's what I said off the top. This is a story that should have been told 30 or 40 years ago.
It's a bad headline. Why is golf still dealing with this? Come on, guys. Like, well, I don't understand why this is still going on. It just gives people ammo to think when I say, oh, I went golfing today. Oh, you went golfing today.
Yeah.
You know, I don't like that.
Well, I think it's very different than, you know, we play the game of golf than they do. In fact, I'm in Liverpool right now, and, you know, you feel the history of the game here. You know, yesterday I played at Royal Birkdale. There were women out playing golf. And they have their own locker room area. They're members of the golf club, and you know, they taste and touch the history of the game here. This is where the game started. And I think with the R&A, they finally come in line with this. And, you know, the history of the game, when it doesn't matter what it is, there is no doubt about it that there is a snobbery about the game of golf when you come over to England or you come to Scotland. But the beauty of this game is people play the game of golf here for the game of golf. People are not members at Royal Birkdale, or they're not members at Muirfield or Turnberry just to tell people that they're members there. They are members there because they love the game of golf. And, you know, we got in a debate with some of my members the other day about that there's no history in the game of golf in Canada, which I'm in agreement with that. And the reason for that is because people in Canada don't necessarily play the game of golf just for the game of golf. A lot of the private club members play the game of golf so that they can tell people that they're members at these certain golf clubs, and that creates the snobbery in the game.
Mm-hmm.
We've lost contact with the real meaning of the game of golf, and that's the camaraderie and the spirit of the game and all the sportsmanship and everything that's in line with the game of golf, whether you're playing a $30 green fee course or you're playing at a $100,000 initiation fee. We've got to get back to what the game of golf is all about, and that is, you know, all the things that are built around the game. And I think over here you really get a feeling of that. And
yeah, you do.
The R&A allowing women in there is just adding to, you know, the spirit of the game.
It should also be pointed out that as late as this announcement comes for St. Andrews, they are certainly not the last to cross the sex barrier. Muirfield, Royal Troon, and Royal St. George's, all of whom are in the British Open rotation, are all single-sex golf courses, golf clubs. Now, the different Royal Troon does have a female membership, but they are technically a separate club that shares the facility.
Mm-hmm.
So they're still segregated.
It sounds like going out on a Friday night and trying to get in the VIP lounge. Inside the VIP lounge, it's inside the VIP lounge.
Pretty much what it is.
Do people grease bouncers over at those clubs over there, Lego, just to get in there? You know, hey, let me in.
I know Lego does. Yeah.
Well, I'll tell you what. I played Royal Birkdale yesterday, and I had a young kid caddying for me.
Yeah.
Who was a member of the golf club.
Wow.
There's no member at the National Golf Club who's going to caddy for Ian Leggy when he comes out to play golf. Not going to happen.
I'll caddy for you, buddy.
Love the game of golf.
there are golf carts that don't let you drive them.
That's right.
Didn't even have a good comeback for that.
It's a beautiful thing, and it's about time they allowed women into the R&A. This is a step forward. There's no doubt about it.
We got to go. The best news about this summer, though, I didn't play a single game of golf with Leggett.
Me either. We were supposed to, weren't we, Lego? And I couldn't
make
that's, it.
He's the king of we were supposed to.
No, he invited me out and everything.
Yeah, I'll call you next week. That's Leggett.
You dodged me. Both of you dodged me.
I saved myself a lot of money by not playing with you, though.
Oh, and it cost me a lot of money by not playing with him.
Cost you money. Whoa, challenges out there, Lego.
He's scared of me.
He's heard it before. Yeah, I'm scared.
Yeah. Once again.
Have a great trip, and we'll see you back here soon. There's Ian Leggett from Liverpool.
Aye.
Don Banks of Sports Illustrated. Bob Cole of NHL on Rogers. That sounds weird. In a minute.